Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 98 and a half. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me. We are in the lobby of the Brooklyn Bridge Marriott. Hanging out here with breakfast time. Saw Mr. Anderson Silva over there with Big Nog and his crew. They're rolling deep, as they normally like to do. People are kind of checking out, milling about, getting ready to head to the airport, head back home after this UFC 208 home versus Durandamy weekend. And Cole Coffee, let's just throw it out there to begin with. Normally, we like to crank out our work real quick, and then while we're still high on that adrenaline of the night of fantastic fights, you know, we're tired, it's late, you know, it might be 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning, but we're like, dude, we're feeling good, we need to talk to somebody about what we just witnessed, and we want to sit down and just do this podcast right away. That did not happen last night.
That did not happen. I mean, one, normally it's East Coast, so it's always a little tough because it's always later, a lot later than when it is on the West Coast. In fact, 3 hours later.
Or so.
Just to be scientific. but the event wasn't what it kind of hoped it to be. So I didn't personally have that big energy waiting to dump. I was pretty much already down from by the end. There were some good moments. But, yeah, last night just didn't leave me just wanting to talk more about it.
It didn't. And I mean, I think you and I especially, I mean, we go to so many fights, we watch so many fights that we're not just tuned into the main event. I mean, it's not just, you know, I get it when people are needing to spend their $60. I mean, this is our job, right? I mean, when people are needing to spend their $60 on the pay-per-view, I get what they're really focused on is that superstar moment, you know, something big happening. But I think for me and you, you know, we can have a ho-hum main event, maybe even a ho-hum co-main event. But there's like two or three or four or five, you know, fights that we really remember for one reason or another, you know, whether it be a great submission, a great knockout, just a great battle. And there were some spots, but I mean, it was just some spots. It was just, you know, I mean, even UFC president Dana White, I saw in some of his post-fight interviews with the UFC crew, he did not come to the press conference, not surprisingly. I'm sure he wasn't in the best of moods, but even he said, I think his highlight of the night was going to be his plane ride home. Not exactly excited about what happened. It was just a weird night all the way around, you know, from nine
decisions out of 10 fights.
Oh, insane. Just a huge run to start with. So, from decisions to refereeing questions to, again, you add in the fact that it's just late on the East Coast when you get out of here. It was just not one that we're going to remember. And it's a shame because I got to tell you, this week kind of changed my opinion of New York. I've been to New York a couple times in my life. The only place I've ever been in is Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And Manhattan's awesome. I mean, there's all the amazing buildings and tourist attractions and all that. But I just feel out of place there, man. I don't really dig it. A week in Brooklyn? I like Brooklyn.
Watch your backside.
Uh-oh. Alex Davis over there. You know he's got something to say. Yeah, but I actually enjoyed a week in Brooklyn. It wasn't the greatest fights ever, but I had a good time. And I hope we'll be back here because Barclays Center I thought was a cool arena, and I like this neighborhood more, I got to admit, than I like Manhattan.
Yeah, you're right. It was definitely both ways, maybe a little bit of either the Brooklyn or the Manhattan favor.
Alex Davis is making fun of me for wearing shorts. I'll admit that I overpacked.
Or underpacked.
Underpacked. Overpacked or, shorts. I underpacked pants.
Didn't pack. You're right. There was definitely, when it came to the venues and some of the other stuff, unique venues like the King's Theater, a beautiful spot. But, about probably the rudest staff we've ever dealt with. And I don't know if it's a difference of, like, union workers. No offense to some union workers. I think some of you guys are probably doing spot-on jobs, and other you just, you're fucking ridiculous. And these people were ridiculous, I think. And that was one of the things that kind of got me. I don't know if that was the difference of, like, Brooklyn mentality as opposed to the Manhattan, maybe more metropolitan mentality. Yeah. It was just it was different. But when it comes to the area and the restaurants and stuff around here, I love the feel of Brooklyn, the look of it.
It's more roadshow friendly.
It is. It really, really is. And maybe that leads into the fact that there you go to more places and the staff's like, fuck you, you know. I don't know. And like, it's just weird, you know, like for the venue at the end of the night, you know, you got the union guys coming in, swapping, trying to kick us all out of the room because they want to get in and get out, because when you're on that, you're getting billed for a certain amount of time.
Like a day rate, basically.
You get a day rate, yeah. So say you come in, you're getting 10 hours right off the top. If you can get done with your work in 5 or 6 hours, you're still getting that 10-hour rate. So it's on them to kind of push it. But when the media and when the promoter that's coming here and renting the building's like, no, we need it for 2 more hours, and the union doesn't want to agree with it, but it looks really bad on them if they push back and try to say, well, we need to get out. And it's like, well, no, we actually had this building for a while. So they had to leave. So they were a little disgruntled. And
they were
kind
literally
of voiced
like,
that,
don't your computers have batteries?
Yeah.
Like, no, I need power, bro.
And eventually at one point, I think I saw one of them get on the phone, probably talk to a supervisor, and the supervisor was like, yeah, y'all need to leave this room and leave the media alone. Because he realized it. You know, but I understand. I've done gigs like that. I know what it's like. So I don't fault him for it. But, you know, we just ran into a lot more of that attitude this week than we have in a lot of other cities.
Unions, gotta love it.
You know, well, and I don't know, it's a strong presence up here, so I think they're more ingrained. They're tougher on their stance. Where I think in other areas where they'll still have a decently strong union presence, but they understand that, you know, hey, if we're built for 10 hours, we might have to work 10 hours. I don't know what it's like up here. Maybe
my favorite, you know, union story was an old New Jersey event that we did, and we did this was before it was legal here in New York, but all the media stuff was over in New York, so they were trying to take advantage of it. And I remember shooting something with the UFC, just, you know, it was a time they were doing media picks. You know, they would ask, you know, for media.
Pundit point of view.
There you go. And so they asked me, you know, John, can you come shoot with us real quick? Like, yeah, absolutely. We walk over there, and then we had to wait for somebody to turn on the light. Like,
yeah.
We couldn't turn on the light ourselves because a union electrician had to literally just flip the switch for the light for the camera, or we would be kicked out of the building.
Same thing last night. The front row of seats was a little too close, and PR rep wanted to move them, but she didn't want to do it because the union people were supposed to move the chairs. They had the union people focusing the lights, doing all that sort of thing. So it was a longer setup. We were watching it kind of happen. Where I know where Chris, who's going to be leaving, doing production in the back, great guy to work with. Normally would just hop on a ladder, set the lights, boom, done. You know, it took twice as long last night because they had to have a different guy up on the top focusing. He went up there and did their thing, and I don't know.
Brutal.
I understand. Yeah, but a little brutal. But, yeah.
Other than that, it was a fun week. It was cold. The snow sucked.
Well, even more so when you don't wear pants.
You know. All right, let's talk about the main event. Featherweight title is on the line. Jermaine Durandamy did pick up the inaugural women's featherweight title with a unanimous decision over Holly Holm. And interesting fight the way it played out. I will say this. You know, I knew that Jermaine Durandamy's striking was equal to that of Holly Holm as far as, you know, being able to go back and forth because Jermaine has power, man. She sits down on everything she throws. She throws it with bad intentions. You know, Holly, I think – I don't want to call her a point fighter because that's not really fair, but I think she throws more in rapid combinations, whereas I feel like Jermaine's trying to knock you out with everything that she throws. But, you know, I came into the fight picking Holly Holm because I thought Holly was going to be able to get this fight to the ground. And – hey, credit to Jermaine Durandamy, man. Her takedown defense, I mean, she proved it over and over and over and over, was much better than I thought. And I got to say, I know that the people were, you know, kind of voicing their displeasure with the scores. I scored this fight 3-2 for Jermaine Durandamy. I gave her rounds 1, 2, and 4. But I know there were some questions. I think, you know, some people gave Holly 3, 4, and 5.
Mm-hmm.
Some people gave – so a close fight, but I didn't walk away from this thinking robbery the way that it seemed like that was some initial response online.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know of the particular rounds, but overall the general feel, I thought the accuracy and just the more devastating shots that Jermaine was throwing was what kind of sold it for me. I wouldn't have been sad by any mean. If Holly got it, but I know what, at the end when the bell had rung, listening to the other media guys around me talking, I know I was a little surprised. Everybody was like, oh, I had that for Holly. And I was just like, oh, okay, maybe I wasn't watching. Not that I wasn't watching the same thing. I just overall, the general feel that I had was that Jermaine had did enough to get the nod. What got me about Holly, and I think, you know, in this moment where she even admitted at the end of the fight, she didn't follow as much the game plan that the coaches had set out. And that was one of the things I said beforehand. She has some of the smartest, best coaches. They're so good at game planning that I think on this one, Jermaine's coaches had a really good plan as well. I think they understood and anticipated the fact that Holly was going to do those rushes forward, you know, and she was – her counters on some of those, she would, you know, sort of just step back a little bit for those first two and then pop right there on the third one. And did you notice something? I was trying to pay attention to the vocalization of when Holly was throwing the punches, of when it was the hush, hush, and the shush. The shush was when she actually threw it, and the hush was like the feint.
That's interesting. I did notice that she was like putting the verbal emphasis even on the feints.
Yeah.
But I didn't pick up that it was.
It wasn't every time, but right. I started getting it, and I was like, oh, well, now they're going to look for
shush. Kind of reading it a little
yeah.
bit.
But it was. I was wondering why there was so much more vocal than what I at least what I remember at the beginning when I first started paying attention. I don't remember her being this vocal. And then when I started thinking, I was like, oh, she's adding another element to her game where the vocal thing, now her competitor is going to start listening on those things. So now she's going to make a noise and a movement, and it's going to cause him to faint to when she's not going to go. But yeah,
it's interesting. I think what you said is right, because the counter shots, you know, I remember, you know, typing out my play-by-play, is that was it. You know, Holly was definitely, I mean, Holly was moving forward, and she was attacking. But then Jermaine would just sit back. I mean, took the leg, never even bothered checking the leg kick. She would take the leg kick that was coming at the end, and she would really just watch the hands, block those two hands that were coming, and then come back with the hard right. And she was throwing the hard right, and it was landing. And I thought, as you said, the more effective blows. And early on, and I think Holly got better as time wore on. I think Holly proved, obviously, she's got an incredible gas tank, man. She's in such phenomenal shape, and she was outworking Jermaine at the end. But you could see, again, just like we did in Holly's last fight, there were moments where she was hesitating. She just wasn't feeling the rhythm. And I think it was because, you know, she was throwing combinations and then eating that huge
rocked.
Right hand in return. Yeah. I think she was like, it kind of froze her for a little while where she's trying to be aggressive, but she's like, well, how do I throw it and not get tagged by that big right?
She would have had to have, you know, and I know it's a lot easier to say that in word than actual practice, but, you know, if there's a way, because once she finally committed, you know, because it was either she threw the little feint with the shoulder and made the vocal noise, or it was all in. Mm-hmm. If there was some sort of way to half-ass that all in where she was just throwing one, like make it look like a charge, stop, let Jermaine do her little move back and then come forward and anticipate and then complete it, you know, to put some sort of a pause.
Yeah.
Because once she started the charge with that flurry, it's just a straight on. It was like just a bull charging forward.
Yep.
And I think Jermaine, it was just like waiting in Mike Tyson where you just got to wait till the charge starts. And then, you know, after two steps or whatever, you throw that punch,
right.
You know. And it just seemed that if there was a way to break that up. But that has worked for Holly all the way through. She just finally met up with a striker that was able to, one, it's confident enough to stand in there and wait for it. That's the biggest thing. I think a lot of other people, once that flurry comes, they want to sidestep it and get out of the way. She waited, moved her head, and threw a good strike, which is what a good boxer would do.
Tough spot, man. It was a tough spot for Holly. She's after being on top of the world, it's been a tough run for her. Let's talk about – can't talk about this fight without talking about the fouls. Round two, well, I guess they're not really fouls because they weren't called fouls, but let's say the after-the-bell action. Round two was the big one for me. Round two was right in front of us, and Jermaine clearly threw the right hand after the bell. I mean, it wasn't one of those ones that was a combination that, you know, just happened to roll past it like you were already in the middle of it. I mean, she clearly threw the right hand after the bell. And what's even worse about it is it buckled Holly's knees. I mean, like, she went down, and then she kind of, like, bumped into the ref as she was trying to get her equilibrium. And I thought that was bad. I really did. And I don't find Jermaine to be a dirty fighter. I mean, we've followed her career. And obviously, I will be honest and say that I've never seen her kickboxing career. I've seen highlights here and there, but I don't know her kickboxing career. Her MMA career, she's never struck me as a dirty fighter. And it is weird because, you know, Holly – did say after the fact that she thought it was intentional. I think that's tough because, I mean, how do you judge anybody's intent? I mean,
maybe an intentional in the sense that she threw the punch. I mean, she was going through the motions. You know, I'm torn both ways because I remember at the time, you know, I think if I wasn't listening to the audio, I wouldn't have felt as maybe offensed by it. And it wasn't even like that I was like that upset about it, because, you know, even reading some stuff like, you know, Dan Hardy went online, and I kind of agree, you know, it's not really the fighter's job to listen for that bell and immediately say, all right, it's done. You know, the ref always steps in and says, that's it. You know, you keep your guard up at the whole time. I think we just had an instance of Holly heard that and stopped, and just at that moment Jermaine's still right there, still sort of going, and it wasn't like a second or 2 seconds passed.
No, it was,
we're talking milliseconds.
It was after, but it was right after.
It was right after. I mean, it literally, if there was, like, if that was, if you took Holly's little bull charge forward and started, and the bell hit right in the middle, that second one's still going to come.
That's interesting. I mean, if you look at it that way, that it's that's kind of part of the whole sequence of events, I can kind of see that. But
yeah.
I guess the big part of it is that it buckled her.
That's
the
thing.
You know, the one in round three, I'll say this, you know, the round three flurry definitely happened after the bell as well, but I couldn't hear the bell. And I was they were on the same side of the cage as Press Row was, and I couldn't hear the bell. It was because there was a big flurry of action, and the crowd got really loud, and it was like – and on top of that, I think the air horn kind of had – you know, every now and then it will kind of malfunction a little bit, and you get a little – you know. Mm-hmm. And so I couldn't hear it. So I don't fault Jermaine as much for the one at the end of round three. I do kind of falter for the end of round two, but I think part of that is just – not so much that I falter for it, it's just the fact that I know the intent, or not the intent, but the reaction of it, like what the result of it was bad, that I did feel like that could have had an impact on the fight. And the other thing is just the referee handling of it was bad. And Todd Anderson, I was a little surprised the New York State Athletic Commission decided to have their guy in the main event. I mean, I think that's cool. They're probably showing some loyalty to their guy. And it's, I mean, the local guys have to get experience on the biggest level. You definitely want them here. But I don't know, in those title fights of UFC events, I mean, that's the pinnacle of the sport. You know, I don't know that you want to throw your local guy in there right away, because to me, you know, had the end of round two, he pulled Jermaine aside and given her a very stern warning and been like, that's unacceptable, then I think you probably would have taken a point at the end of round three. Even if you don't take a point at the end of round two, you give a very harsh warning.
That would have been the warning.
When it happens again, you take another point, or you take a point and you say, listen, that was wrong. So I thought that was – I just thought the handling of it was kind of poor. It was like the referee didn't want to be in the way, which is good. You're not the star of the show, but there are times where you need to be involved. And so I did think that was a mishandling.
Yeah, and I agree. I was a little shocked how much they were out there, but I understand it now, and especially after we saw everything else this week of how much New York wanted
loyalty.
To have New York people out there. Now I bet a lot of people are wishing they weren't here in New York so much, you know, when you start seeing things like that because, I mean – besides seeing Mergliotta at the beginning, I was like, I don't really – granted, I didn't get a lot of chance to watch a lot of the fights because we were shooting, but I was just like, who's this ref? Who's this guy?
Right.
And I understand they've done their things, they've done their sports, and you're right, they need to get out there. But on a main event, on some of the other ones where you want to see guys, and they're really – especially protecting the fighters because that's their main job, and you want –
you can't tell me they don't get nerves too.
Right.
And you know what I mean? Like, they're in the spotlight in front of, you know, 18,000 people in a UFC main event. Dude, come on, man.
Yeah.
That's got to give you nerves. Even if you're not even fighting, it's got to give you nerves.
That's true. And the only unfortunate bad side of that is that in a main event and a lot of these things, you don't want that to be the on-the-job training.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want that to be the real stressful ones. But it is what it is. But, yeah, I thought it could have been handled a little bit better. But the at least the first one, I wasn't so, you know, offended by it. I think the third one was more just because, we just saw that. Like, you didn't pull back a little bit. But she did take a head kick at that point. Or was the head kick on the second round?
Straight right was on the second. I think she took a head kick at the end of the third.
At the end of the third.
Yeah.
And that's why I kind of was like, well, she did just take a head kick, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe she wants – but then I was like, oh, now she wants a little payback. So then I was like, all right, that was – now I was like, all right, now you're going after it a little bit. She certainly heard the bell fine at 4 and 5, you know. So.
All right, let's talk about Jermaine, what comes next for her. She did say afterwards – first of all, she didn't go to the post-fight press conference. She was taken to the hospital for precautionary reasons. She did make it out okay. She was, I think, Anahisa from Globex. She had a nice video of her down here in the lobby last night after she got back, Jermaine and her teams, you know, celebrating. She was in good spirits. So no problems there, but she did reveal in her post-fight interview that she's expecting to have surgery. Saw a lot of people giving her some hate and saying, you know, essentially suggesting, not that she's ducking Cyborg, but that saying, you know, when that's the only logical fight out there, all of a sudden now you got surgery that needs to get done. And I kind of understand that sentiment, but I don't hate her for that because, to be honest with you, we don't even know what Cyborg's availability is yet. I mean, she's still working on a USADA issue. She may be out for 2 years. I tend to think it's going to be a year. We'll see. Again, that's just, you know, that's not inside information. That's just me kind of understanding the situation. So I don't fault her for that. But, you know, Cyborg was there cage side last night. Kokoff, anything get you excited about? I mean, did you see anything from Jermaine that you're like, that might give Cyborg some problems? Or is it just simply a thing where we just believe Cyborg is the champ?
Well, the fact that I guess there's some hand issue that she wants to take care of, because I thought she looked pretty spectacular last night in her fight. I thought she did a great job. So, I mean, if she needs to get that hand taken care of, you got to take care of it. I don't know if that would have been the excuse had the fight not went her way, if she would have pulled that out and said, well, hey, I've been nursing this injury or whatever. Didn't seem to affect her last night, so maybe, it is one of those long-term things. And now if she's a champion, she's got a little bit of leeway, and you want her to be at 100% if she is going to have to defend that belt, and you're going to need to be 110% if you're going to defend against Cyborg. But honestly, I've been a big fan of how strong and how powerful Chris is, and it doesn't matter. I mean, you come back 120%, and I still think she's going to dominate at that division. Whoever has it right now, just a placeholder. But I think the fact that and there's no offense to those two, women. I mean, they're incredible women that would destroy me, but I'm just saying Cyborg is one that's going to be getting in there with him and is at a whole another level. Just the size and the strength.
Speed, aggression.
Know, how hard she everything. Hits. It's just unreal.
I will say this. It could be a fun fight because I feel like most people in
definitely a fun fight. I mean, I've watched her destroy all the girls up to this point. Right. So it's going to be fun as well.
Well, Jermaine does strike me as the person that likes to stand in the pocket and bang. Now, will that change when she gets hit? I mean, because I feel like at this point, like, we've seen Cyborg destroy so many people that every fighter she faces now, I think, is like, okay, how do I stay away from the power and slip underneath and get inside or something like that? I don't think Jermaine's going to do that. I think she's going to be like, hey, let's just go and let's bang it out. Let's see what happens. Now, that may change the first time she eats the right hand and she goes, oh, God, this woman hits totally different than anybody else. But at least for the round that it's happening, it could be a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, the fact that she was here, I mean, from all I get, I don't know if it's true or not. UFC, I'm sure, brought her over here. I assumed that they would have brought her up in the thing, into the ring. You know, maybe they decided, because of the whole way that it ended, that moment wasn't there to have.
Well, I think the pending USADA thing means you can't bring her into the cage. Not that you legally can't bring her into the cage, but just that morally and as a promotion, you can't be
makes sense.
We got this girl that's kind of under drug investigation right now, but let's bring her in here anyway.
Which is a little surprising, though, because when Jones was pretty much pretty confident that he was going to shake it, the UFC came out right out from the get-go and was like, yeah, we're pretty sure you might see him sooner rather than later.
True.
I'm wondering why they had not done that for her if the case is the same. But maybe you're right. Maybe that was their way of saying, we're kind of putting our support, we're keeping our that door open right there. So we're going to bring her, but we're not going to go so far as to bring her up there. But it's interesting that, from what I hear from her side, they're pretty confident that things are going to be taken care of, that the UFC hasn't said anything. But maybe that's why. Maybe
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. I could be wrong. I was right with John Jones. We'll see if I'm right here. Holly Holm is in a tough spot. Well, let me say real quickly before we go to Holly. Four European champions now. Crazy.
Yeah.
Four European champions. Pretty awesome. They struggled forever to have one, and now they got four. Pretty cool stuff for growing the sport over there. I'm sure the crew over there on the European side of things will be happy. All right, Holly Holm, in a tough spot, man. It was not that long ago. Again, a year and a half ago, she was on top of the world, man. She was the new darling. She was the one that beat the unbeatable Ronda Rousey. And it's been a tough slide for her. And it's crazy because, she was in this fight. It's not like she got dominated. I mean, I think she got surprised a little bit by the takedown defense. She definitely got clipped a couple times. She made a couple mistakes, and that she did rock Jermaine on a couple occasions and didn't follow it up, either didn't identify it right away or just for whatever reason didn't elect to go for the kill at that time. Still very much an elite athlete and can compete in the highest level. But, man, just a tough spot for her to be in. And all the props in the world to her. She did come to the press conference last night.
Yeah.
Probably didn't have to, but
it was awesome.
Emotional. I think she was fighting back tears the whole time. And I think you can understand. I mean, it's just been a hard ass road for her.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, does she stay at featherweight? Does she go back down? I mean, ultimately, it leads questions about the whole division. This was a good fight between two people. It'd be interesting to see what they're going to do. I mean, are people going to try to switch over? Because once Chris comes, I think people – it's
might,
not like
they want to do it
they
now.
They want to jump back
might
now.
Might want to do it now.
They want to come now, but, yeah, Holly, I think – I love the fact that she came to the press conference. She's always been so honest and open. If anything else, she's probably too hard on herself.
Very much.
And I think that, kind of makes you just want to go up and be like, Holly, you did good, But she's an incredible athlete. I mean, I think she did a lot of great things, and especially she was rocked pretty good from those first two rounds, and I thought came back and showed a lot of strength and actually turned the tide and put momentum in her favor. But and again, she was very close. She could have been the champ. But I don't know. It's hard to pick who's a good fight for after she just fought for an inaugural title, lost her title, lost the fight after that. She's in a tough position, but I love the fact that she's like, she'll take whoever the UFC says, because she realized she's in a tough spot. She's at that point now that most fighters feel that if they hit three losses, they're done.
Mm-hmm.
But granted, in her case, two of those losses were for the titles, and then one was one that I think a lot of people are like, that was a weird one, but well, not weird, because, Valentina's a stud, but...
It's crazy, because, it'd be easy, depending on where she goes from here, it would be very easy to rewrite history and just be like, she was a one-hit wonder, and that's definitely...
That would be wrong.
Definitely not the case.
But,
there was an argument that...
I hope people don't, but I could totally see that.
Oh, come on, this is MMA. Fans are haters, yeah. Dude. They're totally going to do it. The internet has already written her off. But she's classy. The left eye was busted up. Her lip was busted up. I mean, the right hands had taken their toll, that's for sure. And she was very emotional, but she still sat down and talked with us in the media. And here's what she had to say.
Hey, Holly. Thank you for coming. Do you think that you won that fight?
I felt like... She started a little strong, and I felt like I had the better of the last three rounds. I had her drop twice. I know what my capabilities are. I know I didn't do as much damage as I wanted to do when I had her on the cage, but as far as kind of controlling the pace and controlling the fight, so, yeah, the fight could have gone either way. I felt like I had three rounds, but I also had her rock twice and didn't capitalize on it, and that's my own fault.
So you think you won 3, 4, and 5?
Yes.
Obviously a little controversial with those two punches that landed. Actually, it was three. One big one, I think it was the end of the third and maybe end of the fourth or second or third, and then the two. Yeah. Do you feel like a point should have been deducted after the first time that this happened? And if so, should another one have been deducted after the second time it happened?
A lot of times with the first one, they give a warning. That's kind of normal. I wouldn't expect him to take a punch after the first one, even though it was intentional. And then the second time, you think that at that point they would do something. But I'm just one of those, I don't know, I'm one of those people that feels like I should not have let her done it anyway. Yes, it's after the bell. I hear the bell. I stopped and she threw. It wasn't like in the last punch of a combination when the bell rang. Like, it was intentional. It was after the bell. Those are some of her best shots of the whole night were after the bell. And I don't know how the judges saw that. If they see that as points for her, then, what can you do? It's like, I should have kept fighting too then. I mean, I should have really capitalized on moments when I did well and not even let her get to that point.
Do you think she did it on purpose?
Well, yeah. It's like I said, if it's one shot after the bell at the end of a combo, then yeah, that's an accident sometimes. You're in the flurry of it, but I still think I could have won the fight on my own.
Okay, and last thing, will you stick around at 145 now, or are you going back down to 135?
I'm sitting in a spot where my last fight, three fights, I'm 0-3, so I'm going to take whatever they'll give me.
Okay, thank you.
Holly, can you talk about your execution tonight? And I mean, did you feel that you stuck to the game plan? You've mentioned in the past some hesitation sometimes with your combinations and things. Did you execute the game plan properly tonight?
No. A little better, but no. Part of that is just feeling the fight as it goes, and especially when I had her rocked and she literally dropped to her knees. I stood there in the clinch with her. That was stupid. I should have gone after her. Those are moments where, with experience in fighting, that this is the time to try and capitalize, and I didn't.
And you mentioned that the shots, those illegal shots, especially I think the one at the end of round two, that they were intentional. Can you say how it impacted you? Because especially at the end of round two, it looked like your knees buckled after she landed it.
She hit hard shots. She hit hard shots after the bell. I mean, those are the hardest shots I felt in the whole entire fight.
And lastly for me, you guys were very respectful of each other all week, but you did say you think those were intentional. Have you lost a little bit of respect for her with those shots?
I guess I'd say so. But, I mean, it's still a fight. I mean, I know she's not in there to try to be my friend either, so. But next time, I'll just be ready to throw back.
Well, that was my last question. But let me say, do you think there should be a next time? I mean, we still really don't know what's going on with Cyborg. And there's a potential she could be out for a while. Do you think because of the way this thing played out, it seemed like people's scores were all over the board, the illegal shots, do you think maybe it warrants a rematch?
I think it warrants a rematch. I mean, I think when you have more than half the people saying that the fight should have gone the other way, usually that warrants a rematch. So that would be awesome.
I know you said you felt you won three rounds. We couldn't hear what your corner was saying. Was your corner telling you that you were up or down? How did they? Were they giving you advice between rounds?
You know, my corner always wants me to do the best. So they were still telling me to, you know, back off and strike with her. Back off and strike with her. And I wasn't listening to them, and that was my fault. Because they just knew I could have capitalized even more. I think it's twofold. I think it was kind of not fully committing to the takedown. I think that's, you know, part of it. When you're going to go for a takedown, you have to commit to it. I think that was the biggest thing. And if I wasn't going to commit to it, I should have just stood back and striked. That was my flaw. I think that I would think that they would want to give a rematch. But like I said, my job is to train and fight, and their job is to promote. So I just hope I get the opportunity.
Hello, Holly, over here, to your right, here. What were some of the openings that you saw for yourself, and also the openings that your coaches saw for you that you feel you didn't quite capitalize upon?
I know what those are, but if we rematch,
okay.
I probably don't really want to tell you.
All right. So what we'll say is, was there anything that she provided that you didn't anticipate, something that came as a surprise, whether it be her speed, quickness, punching power?
No, and that's what makes me the most frustrated is that, and I always say this, I'm always taught all the right things, and I could have even capitalized more to win because she did everything my coaches were telling me.
Okay, last question. So you had her well scouted. There were things that you knew that you could take care of, that you could capitalize upon. But what does it seem is the disconnect? Because from a strategy standpoint, it seems like your game plan is there. But over the last couple of bouts, you haven't been quite able to execute the way you wanted to. Like, what do you feel? Is it something internal? Is it perception? Or is it distraction?
I don't really have an answer.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Holly, you said before that you think you could have won the fight on your own anyway, but aren't you frustrated that the referee didn't, you know, do the right thing and take a point away and also issue an official warning the first time around?
Yes, those things probably should have been done. However, the fighter in me just thinks, how about let's just knock her out? I don't really like to put blame on there. Yes, those things, you look at the scoring, you look at how the ref's supposed to do it, you look at those things, yes. That could have changed the way the whole fight went, but I also could have capitalized when I had her hurt, and that could have changed the whole way the fight went.
Also, how did those punches affect you? Because like you said, those are probably her best punches of the fight. And, you know, since it's after the horn, you aren't defending yourself necessarily.
I mean, they're there. They were stingers. But I was still there, so I can't say that I couldn't perform because of that. I'm not going to sit there and make that an excuse.
All right, your co-main event at UFC 208, the GOAT, the former Hall of Famer, former champion, future Hall of Famer. Was that you?
I was supposed to be a sheep, but or goat, but
that was a goat. It kind of sounded like a fake Anderson. I thought that was your Anderson laugh. I didn't know that was
that's my Anderson.
I didn't know that was a goat.
It's normal.
That's terrible.
I think I had a piece of oatmeal that got stuck in the back of my throat.
All right. Well, Anderson Silva picks up a unanimous decision win over Derek Brunson. How do you say this in the most respectful fashion, especially with Anderson? Oh, did they leave? Okay, we can say it. No, I'm just kidding. I would say, no, it's kind of funny. We always say, never say anything you wouldn't say to the guy's face. Going to be honest, I scored all three rounds for Derek Brunson. Knew that some of them were very close. So I thought, you know, maybe you could give Anderson a round. I thought that a split decision wouldn't be shocking because, you know, Anderson is dangerous when he explodes. But I'm telling you right now, when they come together to read the judges' decisions and you hear 29-28, 29-28, I'm like, I don't know. And then they go 30-27. Oh, yeah, definitely Derek Brunson. I'm like, I'm ready to hit tweet already. I've got my result tweet already pasted in there and ready to hit the result. Then all of a sudden, Anderson Silva. And I had to delete the tweet, pull the picture out because I had the wrong picture in there. And I got to be honest, man. I'm shocked. And I hate using the word robbery, man. I really do hate using the word robbery because, you know, I think there's so many times that fights are close. And I wouldn't necessarily agree that this wasn't a close fight just because there wasn't a ton of offense to judge. But I thought Derek Brunson took this fight.
The 30-27 is absolutely ridiculous. And I love the fact that – and it's just maybe it's a point that the guy's name is Eric Colon. Because what an ass. I mean, he made an absolute ass of himself.
I believe it might
that.
Be Colon, sir.
No, it's Colon. You said it wrong. His name is Eric Colon, the ass hat that judged it 30-27. I don't know what the fuck he was scoring. To not give Derek any of those rounds is
what happened to
ridiculous.
Making sure you would say it to their face?
Well, he's a judge. We don't have to care about what he says. We never see him. Fucking New York, dude. But no, it's just ridiculous. I don't see how he thought that Derek didn't win any of those rounds. I'm not sure if they just got caught up in the Anderson hype, that they let that sort of, you know, sway their judges, kind of like their decisions, kind of like if you put money on a fight and you're like, you look for it in a certain way. I think a lot of times people have... They have, you know, hype. They love these guys, you know, and of course something inside them, maybe they're looking for better, something better happening than what actually happens. But no, clearly at the end, I was trying to find our little sheet that in the back when all of us media guys kind of put our picks, I had already circled Derek. I was already like, all right, Casey, you guys got that one. I had to go back and like scratch it out, but I forgot to go back and scratch it out because I was so shocked at first. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I mean, I thought Derek just I don't want to say dismantled. I mean, there was a couple times when Anderson did a few things, but Anderson, you know, just was always on the back foot the whole time. Besides, the only time he came forward was maybe we tried to do his little capoeira dance, but he never actually struck after it. You know,
he just
did his little thing, you know. And, I mean, it was fun to watch, but, you know, there were times when they got in the clinch, Derek was just lighting him up with the uppercuts and these hooks, and he was doing damage. Like, Anderson, the thing about him is he doesn't show it.
None.
You don't see anything
We've
on his
never
face.
Seen him busted
never
up
seen
in his
him
entire
marked
career.
Up at all. And he was getting tagged last night, and you know, Derek, of course, didn't have anything. I mean, you look at Anderson landed 54 strikes. If you go by the numbers, the fight metric numbers, yeah. Derek Brunson had 118 strikes. If you go to significant strikes, 43 to Anderson, 54 to Derek. 2 takedowns to Derek, none to Anderson. When you go to control, Derek, 3 minutes, 52 seconds. Anderson, 11 seconds. How do you give that 3 rounds
nothing? That's the thing, is that you're not taking away from what Anderson's capable of doing, because it's so amazing to watch the guy. Because what he can do, like just stand in front of you, drop his hands, move his head, be patient. Like he doesn't panic in the pocket. And then all of a sudden, like he just decides to come alive. And when he throws, It's scary.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he is scary. He's still the speed. Maybe the speed is lost a little bit at 41, but not much, man. He would flick that right hand out there to land the big left behind it. Dude, the leaping knee is in there. You know, the flash
Dude's
the front
got
kick.
Some serious ups.
Everything, man. And that's what's
– I got him taken down that one time.
But that's the whole thing is that – you know, yeah, it did. The thing is, like, it's there, and he's capable of doing it.
Yeah.
But – you know, to me, if for 4 minutes the other guy is kind of pushing you against the cage, maybe taking you down, landing a couple shots, kicking the leg a little bit, landing those uppercuts in the clinch, which you act like don't hurt you, and maybe they don't, but they're still landing.
Yeah.
They're
no,
still
they
counting.
Were landing.
And then for the last 30 seconds of the round, you just go on berserker mode and, like, come out and, like, you know, throw a couple big shots and land. That's not you winning the round.
That's not enough to
it's
take
not,
the round. It shouldn't be.
It's showing that you're great. It's showing that you're just as dangerous as you always were. It's showing that he still has it.
Yeah.
But to me, man, I just don't – I don't see how he won those rounds.
Yeah. I mean, definitely all the credit to Anderson. I mean, he's still such a dangerous fighter. He's still super impressive. But when it just comes to – when you look at the merits of what was done last night, Derek did more to win the fight. You know, and there was even some of those ones – I was really amazed that when – after they kind of got in the clinch and Derek's getting doing the uppercuts, there was a shot. One of the shots actually, it was a great view, but he recovered so quickly. But you see Anderson's eyes sort of do that backwards roll a little bit. You could tell when he's rocked, but he recovered in a matter of half a second.
Right.
And then actually came after. Then I started questioning. I was like, did he really rock him? You know, are those punches? But, you know, you saw the knees buckle a little bit. So I know those shots were hitting and were doing some damage. But again, yeah, at the end of the round, you know, he comes back a little bit. But, yeah, that's not enough to kind of just take away the rest of what the round is, just because that leaves the lasting flavor on the in the judge's memory. I don't know. I mean,
I thought round two was close. Round two was the one that I thought was closest. I gave Derek all three rounds. I thought round two was closest. Two of three judges gave him round two. Two of three judges gave him round one, and all three judges gave Anderson Silva round three.
Yeah.
I just don't get that. I thought the striking was pretty equal. You know, Brunson, I think, had more volume. Maybe the significant shots certainly were there, but Brunson had the takedown. He had controlled the positioning. I don't know, man. I
wonder if these judges vacation in Brazil much.
Yeah, I just don't get it. And I don't want to take away from Anderson because, again, man, we talked about it, you know, in kind of the pre-show, but we saw it again last night, man. The star power of Anderson Silva.
Yeah,
dude,
big time.
People were going nuts, man. That was who people were there to see. And, again, we kind of take it for granted, I think, because we've seen him fight so many times. And he is, you know, no longer fighting for titles and that sort of thing. But he's still a star. There's no question about it. And he's still incredibly gifted as a martial artist. But I feel like Derek Brunson wants to fight. And I feel awful for Derek Brunson because I don't know what he does now. I mean, he's aggressive and tries to just go in and be crazy against Robert Whittaker and put on a show and pays the price for it.
Yeah.
Now he comes back the other way and fought. I mean, the discipline that Derek had to show, like, you could tell there were a couple times where, like, he just wanted to, like, let go.
Yeah.
And he kind of, like, settled himself down. I was like, no, I know that's definitely not the game plan. And now he loses this decision. Like, I mean, I guess it's, you know, well, you know, left didn't work, right didn't work. Let's do it somewhere in between. I guess that's how it goes. But I got to think that he's just in a frustrating spot because he's had two high-profile fights. He's approached them in two very different manners, and he's come out on losing end both times.
Yeah, I mean, I think he did everything he needed to do last night. I mean, you're right. I think if he would have tried to go, at least initially, too forward, I think Anderson was still in a great spot.
Yeah.
Anderson landed a pretty good counter shot right from the get-go that I think that kind of kept Derek honest, you know, and kind of kept in his mind, like, hey, I got to stay back. I got to plan this. And when he did get in there, you know, I think it's got to be something, too. When you get in there, you start landing some good shots, but the guy, he's not showing any wear and tear. He still comes forward. It's
got
to get in the psyche a little
got
bit.
To.
But I thought he did everything that he needed to do. And, you know, in the sense, you know, we always say, oh, you know, how big of a loss is it for you to lose to a fighter that is, you know, credited being one of the greatest fighters, you know, whether it be all time or just of a specific era, you know, so you can always go home and say, you know, well, I lost to one of the greatest.
Right.
But that doesn't help in the fact that you did everything you need to do and, you know, you should have won that fight. He's got to feel at least good about that, but that you still got that L on your record now. And who do you pair him up with after this? I mean, I think a lot of people look at Anderson, and Anderson isn't right at the top, you know,
right.
And he's, you know, slightly near the top, but, you know, do you pick a guy that is now a couple down below? I mean, you got to have some questions about, you know, plus for momentum. I mean, to go from where he just went like this, if he would have won this would have propelled him for just the fact of the name. And I think he getting a lot closer,
definitely
getting toward that top, you know, five yeah. tier or whatever.
It may not shoot you up the rankings, but at least it, like, it's a little something to put in your corner. It's like, this dude's legit.
Yeah, I mean, look what happened to Bisping after Bisping got the win against him. You know, next thing you know, title shots and all that other good stuff or titles. But I don't know. I mean, I feel really, really bad for him because, you know, he did – I mean, he won it in my book, but – you know, we could say that to the end of time and say, Derek, great fight, man. That was impressive. But that doesn't mean shit for him. He's got to lick
that money in his bank account.
You know, if anything, that'd be a nice kudos for Dane and them to say, you know, that was such a good fight. You know, they didn't give them performance of the night.
We don't normally talk about the bonuses that much because we're more talking about fights than just the overall bonuses. But how about the fact that last night was such a crappy card, they only gave out three bonuses instead of four?
Yeah. So what, they gave out what?
Jacare got performance, and then Miller and Poirier got fight of the night, but they only did one performance bonus instead of two.
Right. So, but you said three bonuses.
Yeah, three. The two guys in the fight of the night and all one.
Right, I was considering that still one. But, yeah. I mean, if anything else, I mean, I think that was such a good fight. They probably could have did two fight of the night bonuses and one performance. I would have been a little bit happier for at least Dare getting a little something. I think people maybe would be like, oh, what performance from that side? But I don't know. But how can you hate on him? I mean, like, there he is over there, playing with babies and smiling happy. You just got to love the dude. I mean, like, he's a good dude to be
Anderson
around.
Anderson showed he's still incredibly dangerous. It's just you want him to pull the trigger.
Yeah.
Like, don't wait so long to pull the trigger. And I don't think it would leave all these questions. It's just weird because kind of like what we went back to in the beginning is now he's at a point in his career. And it's kind of cool, but it kind of worries me what kind of fight's going to be. Because he's basically saying, I don't really have to worry about winning or losing because my place in history is secure. I just want to put on a show for the fans. And he definitely, you know, doing his little dances and doing his little moves and that sort of thing. I mean, he definitely puts on a show, but I just want more convincing results. I mean, hell, even if you're getting knocked out, at least it's a convincing result. I don't know, man. It's just frustrating. Like, you can see it's there. Like, he hasn't – maybe he's lost a little bit of a step, but he already had so many steps ahead of everybody that he's still capable of competing with anybody, but he's just got to pull the damn trigger.
89 strikes is the amount of strikes that Anderson – through. He is maybe, from just doing a quick scan of the other fighters, that's the third or fourth fewest strikes thrown in the night. Obviously, the Tim Boesch didn't get to throw a lot.
No.
Jacare didn't have to throw a lot. Nick Lentz didn't throw too many. You know, of course, that was because he was on his back most of the fight.
Compared to the 243 strikes that Dustin Poirier threw and 150 that Jim Miller threw.
Yeah, I mean, 235 for Holly. I mean, this was not an active showing. I mean, there was a lot of feeling, there was a lot of respect between those two, which you expect. I mean, like, you're stupid. I mean, if you're going to try to charge in Anderson, the counterpuncher, I mean, he's a counterstriker. He's gonna eat you up if you just walk forward. But you just would think that for him to come out and especially get the round, it would have been more active. Like, 89 is not a lot of strikes that you would think. But, again, maybe it's about conserving now. Maybe the days of those, you know, huge numbers and the blazing speed, that's gone. Now this is the new version
that
we have
to deal with.
Can't go
that hard.
You know, and like we said, we saw it earlier in the week. You know, it was a little stiffer. He was more reserved in the open workouts. And Andrew said it, you know, at the end. He was like, I felt it in that third round. And who wouldn't? I mean, good Lord, I'd be feeling it the first minute of the first round, but I'm a fat, out-of-shape dude, you know. But, yeah, I don't know. I just hope we don't get more and more of these, what I just feel is an emotional win when you take the judges and other stuff that are finding more in what they're feeling than what we're actually seeing. Because from what I saw last night, the better man didn't get the nod. And no offense to Anderson, anything like that, because Anderson was still a stud and rocked Derek and did some great things. I just think Derek did enough to get the nod. He should have got the nod.
I agree. Well, listen, I will say for a brief moment, I thought Anderson was retiring in the middle of the cage. He said, you know, he was extremely emotional. Of course, he made the decision to walk out to his son's song, which is cool. I mean,
that's cool.
I missed Ain't No Sunshine. I'm not going to lie. That's iconic to me. But, you know, as a father, I can get it. You know what I mean? To honor
the song wasn't bad.
It wasn't a bad song. And to honor your son in that way, it had a little beat to it. It wasn't Ain't No Sunshine.
Yeah.
But I, as a father, I can understand honoring your son like that. I think that's pretty awesome. But, yeah, man, overcome with emotion, you know, admitted that, you know, I'm too old, too slow. And I don't think he was saying he was too old. You know, it's kind of a little bit of a sarcasm there or whatever. But I did think it was one of those things where he was like, you know, I'm happy I got the win tonight, but I can see the writing on the wall, and I'm going to walk away. But that's not the way he went with it. And, of course, Anderson did come to the post-fight press conference. He spoke to us, and he's doing more and more English these days than he ever has in the past. Granted, that allows him to kind of answer around your question if he wants to.
That's my strategy.
And kind of say whatever he wants.
That's my strategy.
But here's what he had to say to us following the fight.
Well, Anderson, this was a very interesting fight, the way it played out. Derek, of course, was being very patient and not overly aggressive. How were you feeling as the fight was playing out? Were you getting frustrated at all, or were you happy with the way things were happening?
You know, I have one thing. I'm so happy. You know, I'm so happy because, first of all, I love fight. Second one, sometimes when different people talk to me and say, why you don't stop? You don't need to prove nothing more. And I respond, because this is my air. This is my heart, you know? Fight is my life. And when I go inside the cage, I back to my 30 years old and just happy. I just stay happy because this is my life.
It was a very tough fight to score. How did you and your corner have the fight scored, and how confident were you when you were waiting to hear the decision that you had won?
Yeah, I think I use more techniques in I movement more in the last round. My opponent put him in the ground, but I'm more offensive and I attack more. I think this is a good question for the judge, no?
And last for me, afterwards, you were very emotional. You said that, you know, people say you're too old, you know, too slow, that sort of thing.
A lot of people talk about it.
For a brief moment, it sounded like maybe you were going to retire. Did you think about that at all? Did you think for a moment that maybe this would be a great way to go out?
I'm old. I'm very old. The people, yeah. When the guys say, you're too old, this guy is too old. But, you know, I have a lot of experience, and I have perfect time, you know? This is more important.
In your past few fights, you seem to really explode at the end of rounds, doing a lot of wilder stuff, really letting loose, going on the offensive. Is that just the rounds, the fight coming to you at that point in the rounds, or is that calculated risks trying to do the crazier stuff without worry about ending up in a bad position where you could lose by a submission or something like that?
É uma característica. Oh, sorry. You know, this is the my strategy, you know, and I talked a lot to my trainers in my team. And I use in the time for help me, you know, and this is more strategy.
Anderson, was there a time during this fight where you felt 41 years old at all?
Yeah. Yeah. The last round, I said, oh my gosh, I'm old man now. Jesus Christ. But I think this is not important, because when I go inside the cage, I don't care. 41, 42, 43, I just put in my heart and let's go.
What are you going to tell the UFC about what you want to do next? What do you want to do?
You know, so my next step is Dana. Thank you for giving the opportunity for fight again, and now I go back home.
You expect to fight again, though?
Yeah, of course, but my focus now is back to my family, back to see my wife and my kids, and I have a different focus outside the cage, you know, and I go back to home.
So is there not really a name out there that, you know, stokes the fire inside you, or you just want to leave it up to the UFC to assign that fighter to you?
I just waiting for my next challenge inside the cage, but now I need you rest a little bit. I'm old.
Thanks, Anderson.
All this week, a lot of people mention your age and some of the negative aspects that come with being an aging fighter, but there are also advantages that I assume that you've had in terms of all the cage time that you've accumulated. Can you speak to us about some of the positive things of being a fighter at this age, things that you may see that other younger fighters may not?
You know, I think this is the stay inside of mine, you know? In my mind, I'm joking all the time. When my friends say, you old, I say, yeah, I'm old, but I don't think this is very important, because I have a good team for help me, for training, and I have a good life, and all the time I keep straight my focus for my job when I go to fight, and I train a lot, all day. I just joking. When I talking about this, I say I'm old, but I just joking, because in my mind, I'm young.
I know it's fresh, but can you say definitively which rounds you thought you won?
I think I win the two rounds in the last rounds. I don't think so, but it's a good question for the judge, because I defend the takedown in the last round. My opponent put him in the ground, but I attacked more, you know?
So you think you won the first and second?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know, but it's a good question for the judge.
When they announced that you won, were you surprised or were you expecting to win?
No, I just happy because I put in my focus and I talked to my coach, and my coach say, you win the two rounds. Just keep straight your focus for the last one. And, you know, but my opponent is a good fighter, is young, is good fighter. I just say thank you for Derek Bronson for giving the opportunity for fighting, you know?
And were you happy with your performance? Like, when you look at the fight overall, are you happy with it?
Yeah, I'm happy. I'm happy because I do my best, you know, and I just happy. When I put my legs inside and walk inside the cage, I say, oh my gosh, I'm back to fight. Thank you, God.
Jacare Souza did pick up a win over Tim Boach on the main card here. Again, not a huge surprise. I mean, Jacare is just a class of the division. Tim Boach, tough as nails, and as we said going in, I still think deserves all the credit in the world for picking up the phone when nobody else wants to fight Jacare, man. Yep. That's just a tough matchup. Dude is a great athlete, some of the best jiu-jitsu in the game. And, dude, once he gets you on the ground, it's just lights out. Like I said, I just want to give kudos to Tim Boach, but Jacare came in there and did what he was supposed to do.
Yeah, and Tim did a good job sort of defending that atop, trying to not let Jacare get that top mount. But once he got on that top, it's just he's so quick and he's so strong. And you could see in his face, I mean, he didn't tap early. I mean, like, he yanked on that thing. And, I mean, it was either a matter of tap or literally lose that left arm. And Tim's tough as nails, and like you said, all the credit for stepping up, because nobody wants to fight Jacare.
Nope.
But Tim, I mean, and this is one of those fights that hopefully it's not just like an L on the thing. The UFC's got to be like, one, we couldn't get anybody to step up and fight this dude. This is sort of a scratch. We're just going to
forget.
You get a pass, you know, because one, and it was good too. Like, he got Jacare. There was a good shot that he had on Jacare earlier that, you know, Jacare kind of, you know, was like, you know, we need to try to get some
enough of the striking stuff.
Yeah, I love the fact that too when Jacare first tried that first shooting on him, that he smashed it down and stuffed it, you know, and I was like, oh, okay, we got to fight, we got to fight. But then, you know, once they kind of got over and got clinched up a little bit, then I was like, ah, this is not a good start, not a good start.
Yeah, I think Jacare can just sit back and wait for the winner of Bisping Romero if he wants to. But he did say at the post-fight press conference, like, you know,
he wants to fight.
He'll fight. He's not trying to just sit around. He'll stay busy. He doesn't even know when that fight's going to happen. And you know what? It's probably not a bad idea because, listen, if George St. Pierre comes back, or if, I mean, you just never know. Wild cards happen. All of a sudden, we know Bisping wants the biggest fights available. And, you know, I'll certainly never say that he's scared to fight Yoel Romero or anything like that. You know, Michael Bisping's not scared to fight anybody. It might be a tough matchup for him. He's not scared to fight anybody, but he's also made it clear, like, listen, my career is almost over. Probably the next time I lose, I'm just going to hang it up. You know, I got the belt. So he's probably only got a handful of fights left. He wants the biggest fights possible. So you never know what kind of wild card's going to come in. I mean, what you know, if Conor McGregor says he wants the middleweight belt, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's probably not a bad idea for Jacare, but you know what? It's a bold choice, man, to know that he's right there. You got to have respect for him to know that he's right there, and he's saying, I'm not going to sit around and wait.
Yeah, I mean, you figure, and at this point, too, he's got to feel so dominant that there's nobody there. And I think a lot of the guys, especially at that level, I mean, he feels he is ready to be the champion, that no one can stop him. And the best way to prove that is just to keep annihilating through. And if anything else, you're right. You know, Michael and those love Bisping, you know, as much as he can be a real asshat sometimes. Dude is fun to be around. He makes fight week fun. But
yes, he does.
I think he is. I think he is pick and choose him, because honestly, I think – I don't know how well Michael even sees. I don't know how he, you know, really kind of keeps getting clear, because I think eventually it's going to come out that he's not seen as well as he probably should. So I would rather pick my fights. I would rather pick my fights pretty closely too, you know, just because, you know, if there's going to be maybe a fight or two, get your money and get out. I mean, he's got a family to take care of. He's put out a lot of great fights, and I'm not opposed to him, you know, go out and, you know, it used to be super fights, and now it's the money fights.
Yep.
You know, I'm not opposed to any fighter going out there and getting your money's worth. You know, get as much money as you can. I don't hate on it. He's done enough. You know, I mean, has he been a champion forever? No. But has he done enough for the sport for me that I think it warrants the respect to let him pick a good fight? You know, if it makes sense for the fans, if it makes sense for the organization, you know, do I want him to go out there and get pummeled every time? No. So do I care if his next one isn't, like, with, like, a Jacare or whatever? No, not really, because I know – I see the end.
He's paid his dues.
He's paid his dues.
Paid his dues.
And the end is coming.
Yoel Romero might disagree with you.
Well, but, you know, that Yoel will be a champion at one day. Jacare will be a champion the one day. And they have a lot more time to kind of, you know, take some fights, you know, in that meantime or whatever. But with Jacare, he is just, I mean, how can you stop this dude?
Beast.
You know, barring any sort of like a suspension or some sort of thing to take him out of the running, the dude's going to get his hand on the belt eventually. It's a fact. It's a fact waiting to happen. And I love the fact that he's like, you know, me and Yoel got to go. I was like, I want to get that back. I'll show you. I love that, because who calls out? Who wants Yoel Romero?
Right?
It takes
You're
a
like, well,
bad...
we fought once. We probably don't need to do
we're
it
good.
Again. It was, I
we're
mean,
good.
We, everybody saw that
everybody
I won.
That.
Sorry,
you know, I don't
you
need
know.
It. That's a bad, bad man to call out that dude. Like, anybody that's willing to say, like, yeah, I want Yoel Romero, you're a bad dude.
No doubt. All right, Glover Teixeira picked up a decision win over Jared Cannonier. Glover admitted not his best night. You know, I guess he was dealing with some injuries, decided to go the wrestling route. Certainly was not a lot of fun to watch. Did definitely expose some holes in Jared Cannonier's wrestling game, because those takedowns were coming just way, way, way too easy. And, you know, Jared has mentioned that he wants to make a move to middleweight. I don't know if that necessarily changes anything for him, but the biggest thing is that he's got to shore up that wrestling game. He's a fun prospect and a good dude. You know, like I said, we found out earlier this week he grew up right around the corner from me, so now I got even more love for him. But holes in the wrestling game for sure, because those takedowns were coming just instantly.
Yeah, and Glover's he's a big dude, man. I think he just has a way of making himself very heavy when he gets on top. And yeah, once he did, and if you can't get him off, you know, you're in a bad position. I think Jared is probably one of the nicest dudes that we talked to this week. Great energy, you know, very open the whole week. You know, I definitely want to want to see him back in there and go back at it. But yeah, that was a tough matchup. I think he kind of had a lot of ground to make up. Yep. You know, when it came to what Glover was bringing, you know, he stepped up big time to take that fight.
Respect for doing it.
Yeah, definitely so.
All right, fight of the night kicked off the main card. Dustin Poirier versus Jim Miller. I think going in, we thought this was probably going to be the fight of the night. It turned out to be everything we could have wanted and more. Yeah. These two dudes are just absolute warriors. You know, there was one point, I think, like through the midway through the second round maybe, where I felt like things were really going in Dustin Poirier's favor.
Yeah.
But actually, and I don't usually tweet during rounds, you know, but I just felt so strongly about this that I was like, dude, I hope Jim Miller fights forever, because this dude is like everything you could ever want in a fighter, man. Like,
yep.
I thought at that point he was definitely losing the fight, and but I was like, God dang it, doesn't this dude just come to bang every time? Well-rounded on the feet. His transitions in the submission game are so slick and amazing. I mean,
yep.
Dude is a beast, but Poirier was on point, man. His striking was crisp, confident, man. He looked phenomenal. That then, of course, he had to survive the difficulty in the third round. Jim Miller started chopping that leg, and I think he may have broken the leg. Now, I don't know. We haven't heard back yet. I haven't seen Dustin this morning or any of his team. I'm not sure if he did or not, but I can tell you this. When he was walking by press row, he couldn't put any weight at all on that leg. It was Mike Brown and Reed Harris. He had an arm around both shoulders and was like literally not – it wasn't like helping him walk. It was basically just tripodding him across, you know what I mean, because it was a lot. But, I don't know, man. Cannot say enough about these guys. And, of course, it shines even brighter on a night where the rest of the card was a little bit subpar.
Yep.
But these two dudes, I mean, these to me, this is just what mixed martial arts and fighting is all about, dude. Well-rounded, great guys, and come to bang every time. You know, if you see either one of those two names on a card, you better tune in, because it's going to be a fun fight. And they just did it.
Yeah, it was funny because both of them before him were like, you know, we're willing to do it if we have to, not that we want to, but of course they both brought it out of each other. And it, you know, up until that point, you know, no offense to the guys and the prelims and the early prelims, it just felt like the night was dragging. You know, there wasn't a lot that was just really giving you something memorable to remember. This fight helped swing that back to the other direction.
Kind of felt like we were going to, like, okay, prelims are over. Now we're going to get going.
Like,
now we're
going to
get
happening.
Something. Because once that happened, and then you just kind of looked at the lineup for the last four fights, you're like,
this is it.
This is going to be fun. Yep. And no.
And then, not so much. But you're right. Man, I was wrong. I went with the grinder in my pick early. I thought Miller was going to take it. But, man, you're right about Dustin, man. His striking – he wasn't missing, you know. Let's take a look at what his stats were. 51%. He seemed like he was better than that, but 122 strikes out of 243.
He wasn't missing except half the time,
you know. Apparently that was the time I wasn't watching. I guess I was paying attention half the time, and the time I was watching was when he was hitting. But Jim was just tough as nails, man. I can't say enough about that, dude. I love watching both these guys fight because they give so much effort that you never leave after watching one of their fights thinking like, man, if he just would have gave a little more effort, I think he would have got the nod. You know, it's a matter of, you know,
leaving it all in the cage, man. They do it.
They do. And, man, Dustin looked pretty good after it. I mean, besides the leg thing, I mean, Jim tagged him with some good elbows and some punches, but he was definitely wearing more of the damage than Dustin was. But Dustin was piecing him up, man. Like, his striking has gotten so good. When he is on, it is really, really fun to watch.
Think about this. You said he threw 243 strikes, so I pulled out my calculator real quick. Divide that by 15 minutes. That's 16 strikes thrown a minute over the course of 15 minutes. Just, I mean, that's nonstop, because you got to figure, it's not like you're just hitting if you were just hitting a speed bag, that's one thing, you know what I mean? But you're slipping, avoiding, you know, doing things coming back at you. Just, I mean, can't say enough. These guys were definite winners of Fight of the Night. And, again, you know, Jim Miller, he sees his winning streak come to an end, his, you know, career renaissance. He'd been on that nice little run, but to me, doesn't take a step down at all in my book, man. You can still, you can put Jim Miller against anybody in the division. If you're like, hey, the number one contender is busy right now, but we're going to give him Jim Miller. You don't go, well, that's a mismatch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
you're going to get a good fight.
You're going to get a good fight. I just love that guy. And Dustin Poirier did fantastic as well. You know, good to see him, you know, get back to winning ways after his disappointing. And Dude, he's got a sneaky good record. Sneaky good record. So I think good things ahead for Dustin Poirier. All right, the prelims wrapped up with Belal Muhammad stepping in on short notice, picking up a big win over Randy Brown. Randy Brown, man, the frame that he has is unbelievable, dude. The size that and that he brings to that. And, like, when he throws those long front kicks from halfway across the cage, he's dangerous. I just still feel like he's pretty young in his career, and he's still kind of putting everything together. But I think he has some great physical gifts, and kudos to Belal Muhammad, who was basically asking for any fight, was trying to get back to work quickly, came in on short notice in Randy Brown's backyard and picked up a win.
Yeah, he was working some good work on the legs because, like you said, like Randy was the taller, bigger dude, but he's kind of got like really smaller legs. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a Belal was really making a point to try to work those legs and try to take some of that range out, you know, once he couldn't move. But, yeah, I mean, you know, it's fun. And, like, I'd love to see, like, a battle of the looking for a fighter guys, you know,
right.
Like looking for a fight championship or something, just to kind of give them a little bit more legs because they found some really good guys out of that whole thing and Randy being one of them. But, yeah, Belal, he's a good dude, man. I think most of us in the back picked him to win that.
He's got good striking, man. Yeah. He's just a little bit more. I think he's a little bit more well-rounded.
More
I think
polished.
He's a little bit more polished right now. Wilson Hayes, the flyweight, picked up a win over Olga Sasaki. As expected, a fun fight. Kind of as we said going in, Sasaki is one of these guys that, you know, unless you pay attention to the prelims, unless you're watching the fight pass cards and all those, you might not have ever heard of him. You're not aware of him. But we had seen him, and he's a dude that's dangerous, man,
yeah.
And fun. He's kind of, you know, kind of swagger. You know, we think about the Japanese culture a lot of times, very respectful, very humble, and he flies in the face of that, you know, very much like a Teruto Ishihara or something like that. He doesn't buy into that code of ethics. He's out there, you know, hands down, chin out, you know, talking, wagging his tongue a little bit, and is capable of doing some fun stuff.
Yep.
I mean, some of the escapes that he has, it's like, literally, he was like folding his body in half to slip out of the holds that Hayes had. It was incredible to watch, and his back take in the end was phenomenal. I mean, the guy is super talented, but if you just look at it on paper and you don't know, you look at Wilson Hayes and you go, who has he beat? He hasn't beat anybody.
Yeah.
And I hate that for him.
Yeah. And you know, with Sasaki too, he's like one of those guys, he's until you see him, until you see his like little – I loved it at the weigh-ins. He was kind of trying to get up in his face, put a little energy in it, you know. And I like that because, you know, I want him to be a little more memorable because, I mean, who knew? That was his fifth fight with the UFC. I mean, honestly, even for me, I had to go back and I was like, I know I've seen this dude. And I went back and I was like, oh, wait, I think I was at this fight. I think I was at this fight. And I said, wow, he's had four fights.
Okay, so maybe more memorable to me than he's been to you.
The champ has entered the room as well. Champ Jermaine Durandamy.
Nice. Champ over there looking good. Went to the hospital. Obviously feeling good. Still all smiles, no doubt about it. Rightfully so. Looks like she's opening up some cards there. Maybe she got some little greetings from her family.
Yeah, and some bagels.
Mmm.
With
bagels.
Cream cheese, it looks like. Good job, champ. You deserve it. Okay, but yeah, no, great fight with Sasaki and Wilson. And Wilson was that stash. I couldn't get enough of it, man. And even at the end, you know, we kind of asked him a little bit about the stash and whether the stash was going to stay. And, he said I can't remember if he said the stash was going to stay. So maybe we'll have to listen here,
great retelling of the story.
Well, you know, I'm the worst when it comes to retelling the story. Everybody always busts my balls. I'm like, you know that one movie? You know, I had that guy that did the thing. And they're like, dude, stop.
But you zoned in on the bagels and cream cheese over there.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. It looked like, yeah. I wonder what kind of bagel
that is.
All
right, well, listen, I felt bad for Wilson Hayes because we had talked to him ahead of time. And as we said earlier, I think the guy has a case for why he deserves a title shot. I know Joseph Benavidez is the perennial number one contender in that division, but Wilson had the title shot. It was taken away from him because Demetrius got hurt. And then because of that bizarre season – well, that wasn't a bizarre. I like the season of The Ultimate Fighter. But because of the unique situation there was already another number one contender lined up. So he had to go with that.
Yeah.
So he kind of got it ripped away. And Wilson never complained, fought a replacement opponent, fought a tough guy here that doesn't have a big name but is very dangerous, and said to us, he's like, I'm going to get on the mic and I'm going to call out Demetrius Johnson.
But?
And you got no mic time, unfortunately. You got no time to interview, so I felt bad for him. But you guys did get to talk to him
in the
back. So he did make that call out anyway. And I figured, hey, Wilson was kind enough to sit down with us before the fight. He didn't get his platform to call out the champ. So let's give it to him here.
Wilson?
Yes.
Here's what kicked us off. It looked relatively even on the feet, but on the ground, it looked like you also had a sizable advantage. When you were striking with him, how did you assess how it was going?
It was going well for me, but it's just the size advantage, you know. And one thing threw me off was I expected him to come left-handed, and then he started the fight as a right-handed. That threw me off a little bit. It took a little bit of my rhythm in the beginning of the fight, but I got it back. I was able to land some good blows, you know, and unfortunately I couldn't finish him on the feet or the ground. But I feel it was a good fight, you know. It was definitely, I definitely expect a better fight, a better you know, like performance, you know, for myself. But, you know, I got a win. I got a good win, you know. He brought just a different style, tall, lanky, you know, like, look pretty good with his boxing, you know, so that's okay.
What happened at the end there? Can you walk us through that last scramble?
Yeah, man, it was just like, you know, he was a little bit slippery. I took his back, and then I lost the back, and ended up, like, you know, make the worst mistake you can make, you know, give up your back, you know, and then I did that. But I felt that, you know, that I actually was kind of happy because I couldn't finish him. And I knew he was not going to finish me in the last minute. So I just said, man, at least the fight more exciting, you know. I saw the crowd yell. I said, no, at least the crowd like it. So, you know, I was pretty safe there. Control, my chin was tucked, and I was controlling one of his arm, you know, so I knew he wasn't, you know, like, the elbow wasn't hurting me at all. I knew he was not going to finish me.
Does it have to be Demetrius Johnson next?
Oh, yeah, man, it has to be, you know. I feel that I deserve this fight. You know, he owed me this fight, you know. We signed a ball agreement, you know, we did a full camp for it. I show up fight night, he didn't. And I want him next, you know. I feel that, you know, I deserve it, you know. That I am not asking for this type of fights. I asked for number one contender, you know. The UFC threw me this fight. He put me on the shelf for almost 7 months, you know. And so I feel right now, you know, like, they give me this guy. I beat him, you know, like, give him the title fight. I'm fifth in the rank. I'm the only guy besides Formiga that hasn't fought Demetrius yet. You know, Formiga that has a fight coming up. So I feel I deserve it, especially because we have a history. You know, supposed to fight last July. Well, é o que eu espero, né? Eu acho que eu mereço. Aí acho que o Demetrius Johnson merece. Aliás, ele tem que me dar essa chance aí, porque, né, no ano passado assinamos o contrato, eu cumpri todas, né, as obrigações de mídia, de, né, de treinamento. Eu apareci na noite da luta, ele não apareceu, então acredito que eu sou o próximo aí no ranking.
O que você ia falar na semifinal?
Oh, com certeza. Tava tudo planejado já, infelizmente acho que não foi suficiente ali para ter entrevista, mas o que eu quero é o Demetrius Johnson na próxima luta.
Era isso que você ia falar, né?
É isso que eu ia falar, com certeza. Obrigado. Man, you know, it's funny. I was in Mexico City helping Guito Perez last Mexico show, and I felt I wasn't fitting in. You know, I said, man, I need to, like, fit in somehow. So let's grow a mustache.
Wow.
And I like it, you know. But then the barber almost messed it up last week. You know, like, I was supposed to just clean it up, and he almost shaved the whole thing. And I was pretty upset, but I was able to save, though, you know.
So
oh, yeah. I like it.
The ladies like it?
Yeah, it's been working.
Have you been told that, you know, now that you've won three in a row, second longest winning streak in the division behind Demetrius, as far as, you know, excluding Demetrius, that you're going to make good on the promise of having you fight for the belt?
Man, they haven't told me anything, but I feel that I deserve it, you know, like, I feel I deserve it. Like, they throw this fight at me, you know, I didn't ask for it, and I asked for Demetrius Johnson. I would wait the whole year for him to fight him. And then they put me, you know, like, I didn't fought for a while, you know, and then I was waiting for a fight, and I wanted to fight Benavidez first. So they gave me Demetrius, you know. I knew I'll have to go to Benavidez first. They gave me Demetrius. We set the fight, we did a full training camp for, I show up fight night, he didn't. And then Demetrius Johnson for Cejudo, and I thought I was really close, and I couldn't go either way. And then, so in my eyes right now, I am next in line, and then Benavidez should fight Cejudo. Again.
Again?
Yeah.
Who do you think won their first fight?
Man, it was a draw, it was Cejudo, you know?
And
not that against Benavidez, man, and I really like to fight Benavidez, you know? But I feel, as of right now, I deserve this fight with Demetrius. Even so, he does deserve it as well, but he already fought him twice, so let me fight him.
Are you not accepting?
It's hard to say, you know, because, you know, I have to make a living, you know. But the only fight I accept right now, you know, and I feel that I deserve it, you know, I feel that I have a right to do that, is to, if the middle is, I heard he, like, he's going through surgery or something, if it's going to be wild for him to come back, I'll fight Benavidez for title elimination. I think that's the most right, if Demetrius is not ready, because I'm ready to fight Demetrius right now, the first holiday of the year, okay. In May.
They've not told me anything, though. Like,
they have not told me anything.
Okay. All right. You're going to make your pitch.
Oh, yeah. I'm ready.
All right.
If Demetrius is your next fight, what would give you the advantage over him that you can take the title off?
Man, like, it's just, for me, like, technically-wise, you know, like, I feel that I have everything to beat him. I have a good strike, I have a good rest, I have a good jiu-jitsu. Of course, what I have more than he has is the jiu-jitsu. My jiu-jitsu is really top-notch, you know, and he's an amazing grappler, too. But then, you know, like, I just have the all-around, you know. I'm a well-rounded fighter, you know, and then I have everything to beat him. I just can't wait to have an opportunity to show, you know.
Nick Lentz came up short against Islam Makhachev, but just to piss off that one guy, let's not talk about Islam Makhachev at all.
Nah.
No, I'm just kidding. He was very impressive. Man, two scores at 30-25, so that should tell you right there. Chris Lee and your buddy Eric Colon. I still think it's Colon, but he gave a 30-25 as well. So, dominant win there from Islam Makhachev. He does look like the real deal. Nick Lentz just struggled, man, to get out from underneath. He was active from his back. He did everything he could, but Makhachev is a – is a tough customer, man. There's no question
yeah,
about it.
For sure. I mean, yeah, Colon, you did all right that one. That was good. I might could definitely see some 10-8, but yeah, whatever.
All right.
That's all I can say about that fight.
Rick Glenn picked up a decision win over Philippe Nover. I got to be honest with you. I don't know, you know, kind of how you guys, how busy you were backstage at that point.
Didn't really get to see this one at all.
Oh, yeah, you guys were dealing with guest fighters at that time.
Yeah,
I thought Philippe Nover won this fight, to be honest with you, man. I thought his counterpunching was on point. Now, you know, he was defending a lot of takedown attempts, so I guess you could give, you know, Glenn some control time for controlling against the cage. But honestly, I thought Philippe Nover won this fight. I thought his counterpunching, his striking was on point. I thought, you know, he did a good job. I think, you know, if there's anything, he maybe got a little bit complacent as the fight wore on. And that's probably what ended up costing the fight. You know, you've got to make sure you're going full speed all the time and not on cruise control. I think he got on cruise control and Rick Glenn turned it up a little bit. So, again, not a situation where I'm going to be, you know, running to the top of the hills and screaming robbery. But to be honest with you,
yeah,
I thought Philippe Nover won this fight, man. I thought he was dialed in.
Just looking at the strike stats, not that, you know, that's the end-all, be-all, but he did clearly outstrike him all three rounds. The only second round, I believe it shows that second and third rounds has more significant strikes to Rick, so maybe those are the ones that sway the judges. When they see those ones, they may be doing a little more damage. But it looks like Philippe was definitely the more busy person. But
I'll have to go back and watch it. Maybe I think the scores were kind of across the board with media, but I thought Philippe Nover done enough. And the night kicked off with Ryan LaFleur looking really good in picking up a win over Juan Jucao Carnero, good friend of ours, good dude there. But LaFleur, when he's on point, you know, and I know he gets a little bit of criticism for maybe being a wrestling heavy type fighter or whatever, but when he's on point, he always does. He is capable of fantastic performances, and I thought this was a great one.
Yeah, he really did, and I thought that I always like when I see fighters, you know, like he was upset at the end because he. You know, he's been striving to get to this perfection level. You know, I think most fighters will say that you never really get that thing, but you always will strive for it. And he was upset because he pretty much had a perfect fight up until that point, until he made a little had a little slip up there in the third. I thought it was just a good fight. I mean, I actually went in, you know, and I picked Carnero, so part of me was like, come on, you can do it. But he was always on either on his back or just on the back foot.
Yep.
So credit to Ryan, man. He had a great, great fight, you know, and definitely somebody I'm going to keep my eye on more. I always knew that he was a good fighter, but, you know, my initial reaction went the opposite way on this one. But I think going forward, if he keeps fighting like that, he'll probably get my initial nod going forward.
No doubt, man. He's when he's on point, he's a beast. So, all right, well, a night that, you know, again, a ton of decisions, some forgettable fights, some bright moments here and there, some controversy. But in the end, not the greatest night of fights ever. Poirier Miller is certainly a classic. That's one that you can always pull up on UFC Fight Pass in the future and show to people that are looking for a good scrap. But overall, I guess we'll just put Brooklyn behind us and look forward to returning to this fine city and maybe get a better card the next time around. Next week should be mentioned that there is a UFC event. It is in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. That is UFC Fight Night 105, Lewis versus Brown. You and I will not be there. That will be Mike Bond, the young Mike Bond. Obviously, the Canadian will be handling the Canadian event, and Matt Erickson will be going up there. You and I, instead, we'll be in San Jose, California for Bellator 172.
Sunny San Jose.
Sunny San Jose. Can I bring my shorts?
Yeah, that one's – yeah, that'd be appropriate.
Fedor versus Mitrione in the main event there, so that's what we'll be covering. Overall, any last impressions from you? What's the update on Jermaine back there?
She has moved on from that and looks like she's drinking tea now and is scrolling through her phone, maybe Instagramming. Maybe going through tweets, but still being a champion with her family. That's what she's doing. But no, as for the event, wasn't what I hoped. I mean, you know, I looked at the card. I thought there was a lot of good fights. I thought we were going to see a lot more. But sometimes it just doesn't happen. And it's not that from a lack of any fighter trying. Just some days you just get those fight cards. You're just like, it just didn't play out to what you hoped and expected. And this is one of those ones. But, you know, the great thing about the UFC and the great thing about mixed martial arts, there's always a fight right around the corner.
Damn right. We could do it again. We got two fights next weekend.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? I did want to say one thing real quick. Last night, there was a bunch of fights announced, which, you know, we won't go through all that. But a bunch of fights announced. One that was announced that is not happening is Henan Barao versus Duho Choi. The venue in Kansas City put it on their website. A couple people saw it. I actually checked with UFC officials. I was told that fight is not actually happening, and a little bit deeper explanation. That was one of a number of fights we were exploring, but it's not happening at this time and was posted in error. Now, I tweeted that last night, and you know, some people are like, oh, yeah, UFC officials, they're always honest and tell the truth, and that's fair. I think it's still my duty to ask them,
yeah.
But I get it. But I would like to say that I was able to speak with some people closer involved with some those two parties beyond the UFC, and they actually told me the same thing. They're like, hey, FYI, this fight hasn't been agreed to. So might still happen at some
might
point.
Still happen,
but not
technically to the point right now.
Technically,
papers haven't. It's not a done deal.
That's right, and they're not, and they haven't agreed to it yet. So,
gotcha.
Just wanted to throw that out there because there was some confusion over that, and figured, what the hell.
Which more than likely means it's going to happen. But if you got to stay to the letter, you know, is it official? Is it, you know, like there was even when Gastelum and them had fought before, when Gastelum had that fight lined up, you know, he knew that the fight was happening, but they hadn't had the papers all finished off. So, of course, on the record, had to be like, the fight's not happening.
Yeah, but you know what? Normally, like, especially as many people as we know, as relationships we have, you know what I mean? Like, they won't just adamantly deny it. They'll just be like, I mean, I would say it's not technically signed at this point. But for, you know, for people to reach out to be like, hey, just FYI, no, we have not agreed to that. You know what I mean? Like, I feel good. It's not happening right now. But still could. But I just wanted to throw that out there because it was busy last night and I couldn't tweet all that. All right. Well, look, so it looks like everybody's wrapping up. And you know what, man? It
doesn't look like we're probably going to get the champ. But
we're not going to get the champ. She's with her family. She wasn't with her family. We totally, like, just go ask
her. Be that asshole.
She's super nice. I rode the elevator with her the other day. And she was asking about me and do I have kids and my family and stuff. I mean, super nice. You know what I mean? But I don't want to go interrupt her with her family. But we'll get her.
Yeah.
We'll get her.
Yeah.
We'll find something. We'll make it
happen. I'll take a picture in the meantime. Just stalk from the side. What? Is that
you're going to, like, Twitter stalk her over there, and then maybe she comes over? Maybe we'll have a bonus. And 3/4. Don't leave me in there. No. All right. That's all I got. Thanks for listening.